The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Dream, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Special guest in studio, once again, Tyler the Intern, who is recovering from an incredible Strikeforce event that all of us were kind of figuring out what exactly happened there in Houston, as well as some controversies that happened inside the cage, be it officiating, judging, not testing for drugs, and all that jazz. And we'll also break down UFC 118, Edgar versus Penn 2 a little bit later on in the show, give you our predictions as we analyze each one of the bouts and get you set for an incredible pay-per-view event that goes down this Saturday from the TD Garden in Boston, Mass. All right, Tyler, first things first, Strikeforce Houston went down last Saturday night. Exceptional card, but who could have predicted? I'm actually getting tired now of my predictions, your predictions, everyone's predictions, even our good friend Kyle from Vegas, who loves to make his predictions, make them known that this is right, this is a lock, and this is a favorite, and then, you know, this is an underdog, and it doesn't matter. Mixed martial arts is what it is, and you can never, ever predict a fight. It's like any other sporting endeavor, but in mixed martial arts, it's just that much worse because, man, it is so, anything can happen. It's a fight. 4-ounce gloves, and as we saw with some of the results from Strikeforce, anything can happen inside of a cage. I mean, you must have been thinking, what the heck is going on with these predictions here?
Well, no, I mean, in MMA, anything can happen, like you said. You mean, George St. Pierre can lose to Matt Serra. Fedor can lose to Verdum. I mean, these things happen. Even, you know, the biggest upset being Sokoju knocking out Ruggiero in Pride back in the day. Upsets are expected in MMA. But, you know, with a guy like Bobby Lashley, they've been setting him up to win all the time because he's such a big name. That one surprised me. That one got me a little bit early in that fight. I was like, oh, you know what? A big guy like Lashley can get tired, you know?
Well, we talked about that last week and how I was saying, you know, Chad Griggs is starting to come up there. He hasn't fought in over a year and a bit, April 2009, but he's a grizzled veteran. I mean, he was part of Don Fry's IFL team, and he's been around.
And great sideburns.
Yeah, kick-ass sideburns. But at the same time, here's a guy that was just, you know, taking whatever Bobby Lashley could give out to him, and he took it fine, and then he hit him with that right uppercut that split him open, and that was the beginning of the end for Bobby Lashley. And in the end, you know, people are joking around that Bobby Lashley is suffering from Shane Carwinitis and lactic acidosis and stuff like that, and he wasn't able to, you know, he was sent to the hospital. I mean, he went to the hospital afterwards. Thankfully, he's fine, but again, now it shows you he's undefeated. He's not undefeated anymore. He's 5-1, and he lost to Chad Griggs, and people were thinking, oh, Bobby Lashley is the next Brock Lesnar. Well, no, after that Jason Guida fight, I was trying to tell everyone, well, this is the difference between Lesnar and Lashley. You know, Lesnar's got skills on a higher level than Lashley. Lashley's going to take some time. This fight that I saw with Chad versus Chad Griggs last Saturday night was sort of reminiscent of Brock Lesnar taking on Heath Herring. You know, Lesnar had the skills to finish off, you know, Shane Carwin, but at the time when he was fighting Heath Herring, he didn't really, you know, he wasn't confident with his submissions. And here's a perfect example of Lashley had more than ample opportunity to take various submissions from Chad Griggs, who was posting his arms and all that stuff there. And what we saw was Griggs just simply, you know, wait for Lashley to get tired. And he said he could sense it. He could feel it that Bobby was getting tired. And eventually he finished him off.
Yeah, and he did have a little help from the referee. I mean, there is kind of controversy in the stand-up. The ref wanted to look at the cut around the eye of Bobby Lashley, and he stood them up while he was in mount, which, you know, it's the kind of position that you never stand up a fight from. I mean, you've seen stand-ups from side control, which is terrible. Even from half card, I think it's kind of, you know, too early to stand up a fight. But from mount or from back, those stand-ups should never happen, regardless of how tired he was. If Bobby Lashley is that tired, Chad Griggs should be able to get Lashley off him. I mean, that stand-up was ludicrous, and it did, you know, kind of play
into... Well, it's not just the stand-up. It's the restart.
Yeah, and the restart, he didn't restart him in the same position. I mean, that kind of played into the fact that, you know, he went for a takedown, and then Griggs was able to finish him off. But I think what this fight does show us is... you know, with Cain Velasquez and Brock Lesnar, it kind of shows what we've been saying. If Velasquez can stay away from Lesnar, he can tire him out in those five rounds. Hopefully, you know, his plan isn't the same as Griggs to let Lesnar, you know, wear out on top of him, punching himself out. But yeah, you can see these bigger, larger heavyweights. You see it in boxing. You see it in all sports. The more muscle you're carrying, the larger fighter you are, the more that's going to weigh on your heart and your lungs. And, you know, so smaller heavyweights do have a chance with these guys in the later rounds.
Now, Paul Heyman, we all know Paul Heyman from the WWE and ECW days. He's been on Twitter for a long time. He's a mastermind. Let's be honest here. If you don't know Paul Heyman in terms of what he does behind the scenes for many different organizations and just his past, the guy knows what he's doing. And he was Twittering quite a bit after the Lashley fight and was you know, discussing a variety of issues with various fans. And one of the things that he mentioned was, in essence, this really puts the cards in Strikeforce's favor in terms of setting up a Bobby Lashley versus Dave Bautista fight. It's not a fight that I want to see, but if they want to showcase Dave Bautista and they think he's better than Bobby Lashley, even though the guy's like, what, 43 years old?
I think he's 41.
He's 41 or something of that nature. But at the same time, it's not a bout that I want to see. But Bobby Lashley now really has nothing because it's one of those situations. He could still say, look, I'm a six-fight veteran. He's got zero fights. I don't want to fight him. But if he thinks he can beat him, I think that's a fight that they're going to put on.
And I think Bobby Lashley should take it. I mean, it's going to bring a lot of fans in to watch him. They might, you know, a lot of fans might not have even seen this fight with his loss. And what Dave Bautista brings to the table is completely different from what Bobby Lashley brings. I mean, although Lashley has been fighting lesser fighters and padding his record a little bit, Dave Bautista is just essentially a bodybuilder who can speak. You know, Bobby Lashley actually has some amateur wrestling background. So I think this is a fight he can easily win over a guy who has a name, whether it's in another industry or not. And you can get a lot of fans watching, and he can perform, and he gets more ring time in front of crowds. So I think it's a good bounce back fight for him.
When is Strikeforce? I don't know if it's Jimmy Lennon Jr.'s issue, or when is Strikeforce going to stop announcing Bobby Lashley as the former 2-time WWE champion? I get it, sort of for promotional purposes, but it doesn't make sense for a sport of mixed martial arts.
I think it's when Bobby Lashley does something significant in MMA. Well, once he does something like that, then he's lesser known as a WWE pro wrestler or TNA now pro wrestler, and more as a mixed martial artist. So I think once he does something significant in the sport, then they're gonna, you know, lose that 2-time former pro wrestling heavyweight champion.
It remains to be seen where either Lashley or Griggs goes from here, but I'll be paying close attention to Griggs because he did prove that, you know, he could take a bit of a beating again and, you know, survive and withstand, come back to win. Now, the next bout we're going to talk about, tons of controversy in this one here, KJ Nunes taking on Georges Gurdjieff. I hope people understood when I said it on MMA Connected, sort of half-heartedly joking around that, you know, you could file this fight under you reap what you sow. Now, Gurdjieff is a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu who's got exceptional ground skills, and he could stand and trade. He's got the skills to stand and bang, but not against a guy like KJ Nunes, who's got a professional boxing background, whose job is strictly to stand and trade with guys. He doesn't want to go to the ground. He wants to finish guys off with his fists. And we saw what happened. Controversy at the end of the first round when the bell rang. Both guys were in the middle of an exchange. The bell rang, but then Nunes threw a left hook that dropped Gurdjieff right onto his back, and he was, in essence, he was out. That fight, you know, you're saying when we came into the station today that it should have been stopped right there, no contest. You can make that argument there. I don't think that fight should have continued on. It did. And then it went, you know, for about 20 seconds into that second round, and then it just, you know, Nunes again started beating him down, knocked him down again, and then the referee was sort of haphazardly going in there to stop the fight. As he steps in, Nunes was actually stepping away, then realized, I got to continue fighting until the ref steps in. Is he coming in? Is he not coming in? Gurdjieff on his knees, wham! He hits him with a knee while Gurdjieff is down, and a completely disregard for the unified rules of mixed martial arts. At that point there, Nunes could have been disqualified. They could have stopped the fight again, made it a no contest. They could have disqualified him, took away a point, could do whatever they want. Or at the very worst, like I mentioned on the show, he should get some sort of fine or suspension in terms of unsportsmanlike conduct from the Texas State Athletic Commission.
Yeah, there was a lot wrong with this fight. I mean, I was yelling at the TV after he landed that late punch, and the fight should definitely not continue after there. The punch had a definite effect on Gurdjieff. I mean, going into this fight, I thought, you know, Gurdjieff was probably going to stand with Nunes. He has a history of doing that, even with his ground skills, and I didn't think it was the right idea. But regardless of that, he was hit after the bell. He was completely rocked. He stood up. He was wobbly. He didn't know where he was properly. And at that point, it's either ruled a disqualification or a no contest. You cannot let a fighter continue after that kind of damaging punch, especially if it's illegal. And then for the fight to continue and then to land an illegal knee, or to me, it looked like he hit him with the shin in the face. Then you should definitely have a disqualification or a no contest at that point as well. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see if Gergel's team is going to challenge this with the commission. I think they should. I think they have a strong case. And I think we might see this fight overturned into a no contest.
I don't think there's going to be any sort of overturn at all. I don't think they can try what they want. Never does a commission ever reverse anything. Not never, but it's extremely rare, and I don't see it happening anytime soon. I think it's going to move forward. KJ Nunes is probably going to try and angle for an opportunity to take on Gilbert Melendez. He also wants to take on, of course, Nick Diaz, who he defeated at one time during Elite XC. He really beat him down, split him open. That was Nick Diaz before the surgery, to shave down some of the scar tissue on his eyebrows and his forehead. It's a fight I'd like to see. I'd like to see that rematch before Gilbert Melendez and KJ Nunes get together. But, you know, if KJ Nunes is fighting at 155, that's the potential fight right there. Do you think that's going to be next or soon for KJ Nunes?
I think that's the smartest matchup. I mean, there's obvious bad blood there. The storyline's all there. The competitors are both winning. And, you know, I think they need someone for him to fight. So, you know, the history of the camp and the history there, I think it's the smartest fight to make.
Now, co-main event, exceptional fight between Ronald Jacare Souza and Tim Kennedy. Some people are complaining it was a boring fight. It was a fairly tactical fight. I was expecting a little bit more from both guys, especially Jacare taking his fight down to the ground. That decision could have went either way. I scored it 3-2 for Jacare. One judge scored it 4-1, while two other ones scored it 3-2. What was your take on that fight there? Who did you score winning that bout?
It was an extremely tough bout to call who won. I thought his takedowns were actually going to sway the judges the other way, although I don't think he landed a lot of damage from those takedowns. I did definitely think they were going to sway the judges to give him those rounds. I think that Jacare is the better fighter, but I thought Tim Kennedy landed more strikes, and I think he might have pulled this one off. I wasn't going to be disappointed with either decision, but I knew one of the fighters was going to be disappointed. So, I mean, it'd be good to see a rematch in the future. You can see them setting that up after one of the other fights mayhem.
I think the guy that actually wins from this fight more than the two guys, than Jacare, is definitely Tim Kennedy, because he's going to look at this fight and say, you know what, I'm going to watch this. And when he sees what happened in that cage, he's going to realize, if I'd have just kicked it up one more notch, if I would have simply switched gears and went in there to finish this fight, maybe it would have been a different result. And I think Jacare might go into this saying, hey, I'm the champion now. You got to beat me. Technically, I can play safe whenever I want, because you've got to beat me and I just got to do whatever I can to win a round. Tim Kennedy is now going to go into fights and say, I'm not going to the judges ever again. I'm going to smash people and I'm going to win within the distance.
It's funny, because when I look at this fight, I was thinking that Jacare might look at this fight and say, I have to pick up the pace. Because I think going into this fight, after his fight with Villasenor,
yep.
He almost gassed in the end of that third round. So I think he was, you know, being very conscious of the fact that he can't go all out. But I think that was a mistake, because he's very dynamic when he goes all out. And there's very few guys that can put up with his pace and his strength and his technique. So, you know, I think Jacare should come out of this saying the same thing. You know, I got to pick up the pace and I got to push the pace. And hopefully his cardio can match his strength, technique, and he can really work on his endurance.
Got about a minute to go here. We'll briefly touch on this main event, continue the conversation after the break. Mohamed Kingmolawal in his first title defense versus Rafael Feijão, who looked absolutely fantastic. He actually emerged victorious, taking out King Mo. It was an amazing fight, 114 of the third round. He finished him off with strikes after landing a thunderous knee to the midsection, then to the head, and then he follows up with a combo, drops him, and then takes him into the corner where he finishes off with some elbows. Real quick, your thoughts on this bout?
Well, I mean, I think this bout shows the weakness in Mo's game. I mean, he has pretty terrible cardio. He's been tired in his fight against
Musashi. He did go five rounds with Musashi,
but most of those rounds he was just laying on top of him. So he has a problem with his cardio.
Ooh.
Yeah, you can see in the first round, King Mo was dominating this fight. He had a huge slam. He was winning the strikes. And then slowly but surely, Cavalcante was coming back. And once he landed that knee, it was all over. So, but, you know, I think Mo showed a lot of heart.
It's about to get ugly off air as Tyler and I discuss this continually. We'll come back to talk more about this main event fight. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, Dream, Strikeforce, UFC, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590. Special guest in studio once again is Tyler the Intern. I got to stop calling you a special guest. You're officially a regular now.
All right.
It was ugly off air, ladies and gentlemen, as Tyler took liberties at what he said about a guy that I respect a lot in the industry, a guy that's always been open to give me any sort of content that I need, Muhammad King Molawal, who I believe is going to learn from this fight, and strength and conditioning guru Jonathan Chamber put out a great tweet after the bout. I recall when George St. Pierre, I was sitting in this very chair, actually, when I had George St. Pierre on this radio station after his loss with Matt Serra, and during the interview I said, I think this is the best thing that could ever happen to you. And King Mo was very humble after the bout, and he said, you know, this is the best thing that can happen to me. I'm going to learn from this and come back stronger. You took liberties saying that all he did against Musasi was lay and pray, which I disagree because it was fairly technical, and that he has no heart.
No, I said he has lots of heart. I was very impressed with that. I was thinking that some people might get on him and say, you know, he gets a lot of flack because he's very outlandish with his ring entrances and the things he says. He pisses a lot of people off.
Yeah.
Some of them being Rampage. But, you know, after he got hit with that big knee, he stuck in it. He was, you know, trying to work a guard even though his head wasn't all there. But what really impressed me is when he went for that takedown and he was taking heavy, heavy shots and he kept pushing. And you could tell he was not all there, but he wouldn't be denied that takedown. And he was sticking with it. I mean, it's really, really hard to stick with it. And then, you know, until his arm went limp, Big John wasn't stopping the fight. So, you know, I think... Mo has a lot of heart. He has a really great future, and nothing against him. I mean, I think his cardio is a little bit suspect, but I mean, he's one of the best interviews I've ever had.
You interviewed him at the MMA Expo,
and he's a great guy.
Wait till I tell him the next time I see him what you said.
he's really awesome. So I hope you don't make them all angry at me because I have the cardio.
I'm going to throw you under the bus, just like Jimmy Cotton back at the associate producer over at Sportsnet. I throw him under the bus all the time because I know it gets under his skin. And speaking of producers over at Sportsnet, Jacob Clark, once again, the producer for MMA Connected, refusing to come on the show. I think we're at 8 or 9 weeks running here. We will never stop insulting Jacob Clark until he comes on this very radio station and gives us his thoughts on the world of mixed martial arts, whether it's headlines or fight analysis. Jacob, if you're listening, sorry. So, moving forward now, in terms of Feijão, in terms of Jacare, this brings the total, if you're looking at champions in mixed martial arts, if we look at the UFC, the WEC, and Strikeforce, check this out, interesting stat here. When it comes to champions, there are 6 Brazilians, 5 Americans, 1 Canadian, and 1 fighter from Holland. This Brazilian whole cycle, once again, it got to the point where they were dominating. Because let's face it, the birthplace of MMA, you could say, was Shudo in Japan. It really got big in Brazil with Luta Livre versus MMA, the Gracie Challenge, all that stuff. So the Brazilians came onto the scene and were all over the world, just like they are in soccer, all over the world, you know, beating people up. Doesn't matter what nation you're from, the Brazilians are coming to beat you up. Now they're, again, at the elite level. They were up, they were down, they were up, they were down. Now they're back up again with 6 champions. Out of the 13 divisions, they've got 6. That's a pretty good. That's nearly 50% right there.
Yeah, and I mean the places that the champions are coming from, it makes complete sense. I mean, you got the wrestling in America with over even the Dutch fighters. You have very
it's a good mix.
It's Muay Thai, but it's a really good mix of boxing as well because they have a lot more head movement than traditional Muay Thai fighters do. You know, Japanese has a long history of judo and all that, and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, of course, Brazil. So you can see, you know, those countries should be represented. They are represented. What's surprising about this is the lack of Japanese fighters.
Yeah.
I think in the future...
It's almost heartbreaking, to be honest with you.
I think we're going to see more Japanese champions at the lower weights. I think now that they're doing the weight cutting, I think first... The Japanese scene has to be sorted out.
Overhauled.
We talked about it last week, about all the problems there. But I think maybe that's going to lead to more champions, you know, probably in the next decade or so. But I think they will show up on the scene. But, yeah, it's not surprising that Brazil is on top. And, of course, with most of the major promotions coming out of America, they're going to have their American fighters pushed really hard. So it's not surprising to me, but it makes sense.
Strikeforce also announced their next card, or their next big card, October. I think it's October 4th or October 9th. Nick Diaz will be on the card, probably in the main event. If not, Sarah Kaufman will be in the main event, which I doubt because they never make Sarah Kaufman the main event regardless. She's taking on Marlos Conan for the title, 135 pounds. It'll be the second title defense, I believe, for Sarah. It's going to be a great fight. I don't think Marlos at this time is going to defeat Sarah. I think Sarah's going to have a great fight. I think she's going to finish her off and really make a statement via Marlos Conan and continuing her plight to try and take on Christiane Cyborg Santos, who was at the Strikeforce event last Saturday. Also on the card, Luke Rockhold taking on The Law, Matt Linlin, who's continuing to get a lot of, people are berating him for not showering 2 or 3 days before a fight, and people are complaining about, how bad he technically stinks, and it's one of the things he likes to use to his advantage. So I thought it was kind of funny, but that's another situation where, Luke Rockhold has a great opportunity here. Even though Matt Linlin isn't the top middleweight like he used to be before, he's got a great opportunity to say, hey, I've defeated a pretty big name on my record.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you have a win over Linlin, he's one of the, I don't know if I would say legends, but he's one of the pioneers of MMA. He's got a great wrestling pedigree, and he shows he's still got it. I mean, he can still grind out, like any wrestler, he can still grind out decisions. So he has a big opportunity to get a win over a really legit fighter and, one, I guess I would say, legends of the sport.
SureDog.com had an amazing live stream regarding Strikeforce. They had Daniel Cormier taking on Jason Riley, and it was Cormier's third fight in as many weeks. I believe he's now 5-0, as well as Andre Galvao taking on legendary pioneer Jorge Macacopatino. If you've never seen him and Jose Pele Landy fight, I highly recommend looking up that exceptional rivalry. It was unbelievable. Off air, we were discussing, Strikeforce and where do they go from here, and you've got a bunch of ideas.
Yeah, I think this card, even though a lot of people will get down on them, I think this has actually turned out for the best for them. With Muhammad Lawal losing his title, it opens up Babalu to get back into that division and fight some of those guys. He's arguably their highest-rated light heavyweight, besides, I guess, Feijão now. With D'Souza and Kennedy, you have Mayhem in the mix with both of those guys. And
Mayhem's continuing to call out Nick Diaz.
Definitely.
Nonstop. It is on Twitter. It is on Facebook. It is on any sort of viral media stuff. It is unbelievable what this guy's trying to do to get a fight with Nick Diaz.
And you know what? They should do it. I mean,
I think they should.
If he's promoting it, they should always make the fights that are being promoted. But yeah, you have King Mo and Bobby Lashley losing. They're two of the top prospects in Strikeforce, two of the guys that they're hoping were going to bring in a lot of money. But like you said, on the undercard, we had Cormier and Gavel both coming off big wins for them. And they're the two guys that, you'll be looking for in the future. Galvao is kind of like a Jacare. He's one of the world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts out there. He has numerous world championships. He's been fighting for the last couple of years, and he's getting better and better. And Cormier, a high-level wrestler, heavyweight, he can come right into their heavyweight pitcher and make a splash, especially if he's taking so many fights on such short notice. So, I think this is a good card for the future. I mean, Strikeforce should stop worrying about having to compete with the UFC and, really big promotion. And they should just worry about, developing talent. Because when you have talent like this, they're going to build fans over a long period of time. And you're really going to get a proper fan base instead of the Bobby Lashley versus the Dave Bautista type fan base. You don't want those quick hits. You want those long, you want people in it for the long haul. So I think this is actually a good turnout for them.
And The Last Emperor is also making headlines. Fedor Emelianenko is apparently aiming for a December return. And the three names that are being bandied about as we speak are Antonio Bigfoot Silva. We also, Verdum's not going to happen. The rematch of Verdum is not going to happen because Verdum is technically sidelined till early, if not mid 2011. So for Fedor, they're talking about Antonio Bigfoot Silva, Sergey Karnatov, and of course, ironically, the Ream, Alistair Overeem, the Strikeforce heavyweight champion. If you had to make a say, who would Fedor be fighting next?
I think Bigfoot makes the most sense because I think more American fans or more Strikeforce fans know who he is as opposed to a Karatanov. I don't think Overeem's going to happen because I heard that he said he won't fight anyone but Verdum. So, and you'd have Verdum off until next year. I think Bigfoot Overeem fight would have made sense.
And what if they negotiate that contract and Fedor signs with the champions clause?
Well, I think Fedor should fight Bigfoot. Hopefully they can get a champions clause in there. I don't think he's going to the UFC anytime soon. So I just like to see these guys fight, right? So hopefully they can just stop all this talking, get them to sign some papers and actually get these fights made. You know, I don't like Overeem saying he's only going to fight certain guys. I think he should fight whoever they put in front of him.
Yep.
To me, it seems like Overeem has been picking his opponents way too much in the last few years, and the competition he has been fighting hasn't been the upper echelon of heavyweight fighters. So I think Overeem should fight anyone they put in front of him. And you know what? I think the Bigfoot Fedor fight makes the most sense if Overeem's only going to fight Verdum, and then have the winners of those two fights fight for the title.
And of course, the Ream may have some problems with K1 as well, especially with the disaster that's happening over there with FEG, the owners of K1, and of course the owners of Dream going through all this financial difficulties, even though they've had Puji Capital allegedly invest some money. It's causing some major havoc over there for the K1 organization, with recent rumors that also Semi Schilt is now in negotiations with the UFC, or at least the UFC is reportedly talking to him about bringing him back to the Octagon, which kind of bowls, kind of gets you thinking maybe K1's in more trouble than we can actually think, like we actually know about. And if that's the case, then Alistair's going to have no choice but to fight only for Strikeforce technically and take on whoever they say he needs to take on. This handpicking of opponents, I'm not sure I agree 100% with that, because I think from the stuff that I know about Overeem, he'll fight anyone, anytime, anywhere. Let's do this. And he really wanted Fedor before that whole situation with Verdum tapping out The Last Emperor a couple of shows ago. So who knows what is going to happen with that? Would I like to see a Fedor versus Overeem fight? Of course I would. Do I think it makes sense? No. If Strikeforce is talking about their business and wanting to save their business from losing another one of their top draws in Fedor, then yeah, I could see why they want to renegotiate his contract, seeing as Fedor keeps doing it to them, and they want to do it back and lock him in there with a champions clause, so that if he does fight Overeem and he beats him, he's locked in for another three fights, which is if that's what they want to go for. So again, it remains to be seen what's going to happen. And this, the whole landscape of Japanese mixed martial arts is continuing to, it's very fluid right now. It's continuing to take shape, but who knows what is going to happen. Any other Strikeforce thoughts that you want to talk about before we move on to UFC 118 going down this Saturday night?
Just about the K1 thing, what worries me is if K1's really having all those financial problems, it worries me that they're just going to give up on MMA altogether and just stick with kickboxing, because that's where they made all their money. That's where they made their brand. That has me a little bit worried, but when one business fails, one venture fails in MMA, another one's going to spring up. You have shows like Sengoku,
who may benefit, but they're financially strapped as well.
There will be smaller shows. I mean, hopefully someone will get the business model right over in Japan.
I hope so.
It'll take longer, but it'll eventually happen. We're just going to have to wait.
Maybe it bodes well for the UFC in Japan.
Oh, perhaps.
Because they're really looking at penetrating the Asian market with their offices opening up in China. Lots of connections over there. Obviously in Abu Dhabi, in Dubai. They're looking at Japan. They're looking at India. I mean, that's a market they're really trying to penetrate. They said that the next ultimate fighter, the one that we're used to, but the next international one, or the first international one really, is going to be the one in the Arabs. So who knows what's going to happen with that portion? The UFC is continuing to expand. You want to make another point?
Well, it wouldn't be surprising to me if K1 was strapped for cash and decided to sell off all their Dream footage to the UFC. I mean, if the UFC are going to pick up some of these fighters, they're going to need
Kawajiri.
They're going to need that kind of footage, right, to put together promo packs and to really promote fighters. So, I mean, maybe that's a way K1 can make some money, and maybe it's a way that UFC can start grabbing some contracts and getting some of these guys fighting for their organization.
I got to get off the Kawajiri bandwagon, don't I, since he lost to Shinya Aoki?
No. He'll be back.
Now, in terms of Aoki, that's a guy that we'd all want to see in the UFC's lightweight division to silence a bunch of people, because this weekend, in the main event at UFC 118, Edgar versus Penn 2, is Frankie Edgar the answer, taking on the prodigy BJ Penn, which is going to be a spectacular fight. Poor Edgar is not getting any love. He calls himself the Rodney Dangerfield of mixed martial arts. And, of course, that co-main event pits mixed martial arts versus boxing. Well, reality, it's a mixed martial arts fight as Randy Couture takes on James Lights Out Tony. We'll get into UFC 118 next. You're listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, Dream, Japanese MMA, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. Sitting across from me is Tyler the Intern, the man at Sportsnet, another one of those guys that makes me look good on television and makes me sound, okay on the radio station. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
That's awesome. All right. So we take a look here at UFC 118 going down this Saturday night from the TD Garden in Boston, Mass. Dana White's hometown, so you can just imagine how exciting he is. It's a nice card. It's you wouldn't say it's absolutely stacked from top to bottom, but it is a stacked card. Let's be honest here. We'll start off real quick on the undercard, go through some of these fights before we get onto the main card. First bout of the evening, which will be a dark match preliminary bout, Mike Pierce taking on Amilcar Alves. Alves is a tough guy. Most people don't know him, and I don't think there's any relation at all to Thiago Alves, but he's got a tough fight taking on Mike Pierce. I think Alves potentially will suffer that UFC octagon jinx, that rookie jinx, and Mike Pierce is a tough guy, gone from fighting John Fitch to the very first fight in the undercard.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was just going to say, I think Alves is going to have a little bit of a problem debuting in the UFC, especially the guy with like Mike Pierce who's been in there with the top competition. So yeah, you just said exactly what I was thinking.
Nick Ospisak, he's taking on Greg Soto. Ospisak's last fight was a loss to Ricky Story. And Greg Soto, of course, a tough, rough and rugged veteran, 7-1. His last fight was a loss to Matt Riddle. So both these guys cannot afford to lose this bout. I'm going to go with Ospisak.
I'm going to go with Ospisak as well. I mean, they both fought Riddle before, except Nick came off with a win, whereas Soto came off with a loss. So I think, yeah, he's going to be able to take him down, control him, and win.
Dan Miller used to be a top middleweight contender. He'll be the last fight in the preliminary card that doesn't air on live television. He's taking on John Salter, and we could just imagine the athlete Jason McDonald really hoping that Dan Miller pulls this off or perhaps loses, because we all know Jason McDonald wants to get another piece of John Salter, because the last time those two tangled inside the cage, we saw what happened to Jason McDonald's ankle. That was at UFC 113 just a couple months ago in May. I think Dan Miller is going to be too much for John Salter.
Yeah, I agree. We didn't really get to see a lot of Salter because of the injury to Jason McDonald. But I think even if he wants to take Dan Miller down, that's not a place you want to be with Dan Miller. So I think Dan's going to take this one.
Nick Lentz taking on Andre Winner. Lentz is undefeated in the UFC. He's 18-3. His debut was at UFC 103. He defeated Rafael Oliveira. He then defeated, it was a draw with Thiago Tavares, which is a weird draw because of the point that was taken away. And of course, he beat Rob Emerson. Andre Winner, the Brit, tough cookie. He's 11-3 as well. His last two fights, he's got a mutual opponent in defeating Rafael Oliveira, and he also defeated Rolando Delgado. In this fight here, I'm going to pick Nick Lentz. You are going for?
Nick Lentz as well. I think he's going to be able to take Winner down and control him. And I don't know if he'll be able to finish him off, but, you know, he might be able to. He's definitely going to win, though.
And, of course, two fighters that are Ultimate Fighter alumni. Of course, Joe Lauzon taking on Gabe Ruttiger, who we all thought was never, ever going to be back into the UFC. But he is taking this fight on short notice as there was an injury to Terry Etim. Gabe Ruttiger is the guy that people mock for not making weight, eating ice cream before he was supposed to fight on the Ultimate Fighter. Ended up getting kicked off the show. Sammy Stout was Joe Lauzon's last bout, and he lost. That was at UFC 108, Evans versus Silva. It was a great fight for Sammy, a tough fight for Joe Lauzon, but since then it's been a long road for him to come back. He's going to be hungry. I really think he could take out Gabe Ruttiger, but Gabe Ruttiger, I mean, this guy's he's on a 6-fight winning streak. None of them have been in the UFC. They've all been outside of the UFC. He's a tough guy. I just think Joe Lauzon's going to be too much for him.
Yeah, most of those wins that Gabe has are by submission. I think 5 of the 6 are. I expect Lauzon to actually get him with a footlock some point in this this fight. He's really known for his leg locks. So yeah, I'm going to go with Lauzon as well. So I think we picked all the same on the preliminaries there.
I'm changing all my picks. Changing every single one of my picks. All right, Nate Diaz. Now let's move on to the main card.
I'll pick first.
five fights in that main card. It just gets better from here. The very first one is the Irish hand grenade, Marcus Davis, taking on Nate, I will triangle choke you whenever I want, Diaz.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Nate Diaz. I think the majority of Marcus Davis's opponents lately have been more or less strikers or guys who tend to strike, and that's his game. But he hasn't looked so great all the time standing up. And on the ground, I think Diaz takes him. Even though this is a higher weight class for him, I think Diaz is going to be able to at least frustrate him on the feet and, if not, submit him on the ground.
What do you think of Melvin Guillard striking and, of course, Marcus Davis is striking?
I think Gillard's a lot faster than Davis.
Hence the reason I will also pick Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz had an exceptional fight with Melvin Gillard. He defeated him via submission guillotine choke in the second round, which was sort of ironic because it was almost like, looking back at that fight, Gillard stuck his head under his arm pretty much. But he withstood Melvin Gillard, and I think Marcus Davis is going to have his hands full with Nate Diaz.
But Gillard was winning that fight until he stuck his head into that guillotine.
So what are you saying?
I'm just saying I should pick Marcus Davis? I'm not saying anything.
I think Diaz, if he's smart, keeps his chin in check and doesn't get overly cocky, because it's one of those things with the Diaz brothers. They're fearless.
Yeah.
They will stand and strike with anyone. And we saw what happened with Nick Diaz and KJ Nunes, but Diaz's boxing has come, you know, it's just full circle. This guy's got amazing. His jab is incredible. Nate Diaz isn't on the level of his brother, but at the same time, he's fearless and he'll do whatever he can to get into your head. I can't wait to see the stare down at the weigh-ins. It's going to be exceptional. Nate Diaz is going to he's just going to tower over top of Marcus Davis and just stick his chin right in his eye, no doubt. Next bout of the evening, Kenny Florian taking on Gray Maynard, which pulls the UFC apart here should Kenny Florian win and BJ Penn win in that main event. Because what do you do here? Because in essence, Kenny Florian versus Gray Maynard is a number one contender bout, with the winner likely getting a title shot. And I'm going to put an asterisk there. It could be a very difficult scenario for Kenny Florian if he does win this fight. I won't give my pick until you talk.
This is probably the toughest fight for me to call on the entire card, except maybe the main event. But this is a really tough one to call. My heart is kind of leaning towards Kenny because it's his hometown. I think he might pull out a little bit more. But my head is saying Gray Maynard. You saw Kenny Florian had a lot of trouble with BJ Penn getting him to the ground. Maynard is arguably a better wrestler. He's going to have a lot of difficulty getting him to the ground. Kenny has great Muay Thai. He likes to throw a lot of kicks, but I don't think he's going to do that with a wrestler like Maynard. So I think Gray is going to be able to outbox Kenny. It's really tough. It's really going to depend on how good Florian's hands are. But I'm going to have to go with Gray Maynard on this one.
Gray Maynard defeated Frankie Edgar, who is the current UFC lightweight champion. He then went on to beat Rich Clemente, Jim Miller, Roger Huerta. Then he fought an exceptional submission fighter in Nate Diaz, and Nate Diaz couldn't do a thing to him. So, who's a better submission fighter, Nate Diaz or Kenny Florian?
I'd probably have to go with Diaz.
Right, Kenny Florian's jiu-jitsu is sick because his jiu-jitsu for mixed martial arts is ridiculous, and I think he's an exceptional striker. When you look at some of the strikers that Gray Maynard has faced, he's faced Roger Huerta, who's a slick puncher. His Muay Thai is much, much better since that fight there. Other than that, he fought Rich Clemente. So Gray Maynard could find himself in a lot of trouble in this fight here. As much as I think he's a better wrestler than Kenny Florian, we never know what can happen, but I will go with Kenny Florian in this fight. Who did you pick?
I picked Maynard.
I'm going to go with Kenny Florian. I really want to go with Gray Maynard, but in analyzing this fight, and above all, like I said at the very top of the show, I don't care if I go 0 for 11, 0 for 10, 0 for 20. I don't care. I just love breaking down these fights and trying to figure out exactly who's going to win, and it's very, very difficult when you think about it. Now, this next bout, Damian Maia taking on Miriam Miranda. What we have here is Damian Maia, an exceptional jiu-jitsu fighter, arguably one of the best in mixed martial arts, taking on Miriam Miranda, who's a stud wrestler who loves to stand and bang. What we have here is almost a Muay Thai, like Damian Maia loves Muay Thai in terms of stand-up. Miriam Miranda loves boxing in terms of stand-up. Who wins this fight?
I think Maia takes it. His striking's been looking a lot better. He stood in there with Anderson Silva. I definitely don't think Miranda's going to take him down. If not taking him down, Maia might even pull guard. He's done that before.
Yep.
If you go to the ground with Maia, the fight's over. I mean, there's very few guys with his kind of jiu-jitsu ability in MMA. The only person in that division I wouldn't want to go to the ground with is Tokino, because he might rip your leg
off. Off, yeah.
So, but I think Damian Maia is going to win this one.
If you're wondering who Mario Miranda is, he made his UFC debut on March 31st. He lost to Gerald Harris. If you remember who Gerald Harris is, he had that exceptional slam in his bout two or three shows ago. Or maybe no, it was at UFC 116, I believe. It was
against David Branch.
Branch, yeah. And then afterwards, so he lost that bout there. It was a TKO with about 11 seconds left in the first round. Miranda lost that bout, and then he rebounds back and comes to UFC 115 and takes on David Loazo. I was there for that fight there, and he completely dominated David. We all know the issues with David going into that fight. You'll know a lot more when you watch The Striking Truth, the movie about George St. Pierre and David Loazo. You really get a sense of what happened before, during, and after that fight there. So that's who Mario Miranda is, and he was also brought in by Anderson Silva's camp to train for Chael Sonnen. So you can make your own assessment there as to if it was good enough for Anderson Silva, because we saw what happened with Chael Sonnen and how Chael Sonnen dominated 23 minutes of that bout until Anderson Silva locked in that triangle choke. So that's who Miriam Miranda is. As for my prediction, Damian Maia. So we're getting pretty ugly here. Randy Couture in the co-main event taking on James Toney. We have a UFC Hall of Famer against a future Boxing Hall of Famer, one of the greatest champions, in my opinion, to ever step inside of a squared circle. Does James Toney have any chance in this bout?
I don't think so. I mean, he has a little bit of a chance. Couture is a Greco-Roman wrestler. His natural a tendency is to get in the clinch, which is not always the best thing to do with a boxer like James Toney. He is very short inside lefts and rights. They could rock Couture, but I think Randy's going to be aware of that. I think he's probably been working his freestyle wrestling a lot more, even though the old guys don't seem to have the dexterity to really pull off the freestyle wrestling takedowns. But I think Couture is going to be able to control Toney up against the fence and take him down. And then once that happens, it's all over.
Coming into this fight, I always said Randy Couture is the one guy that I'm really nervous about fighting James Toney because he's older, right? James Toney's older as well, but Randy Couture we've seen in his last few fights, he can't take the same punch that he used to. And now he's facing the best puncher in the UFC right now, the greatest striker in the UFC right now, who's now allowed to wear 4-ounce gloves. That scares me for Randy Couture. And coming into this fight, and every time I interview Randy Couture and James Toney, when I come out of both interviews, I think I've interviewed James Toney 2 or 3 times before this bout and Couture twice. And every time I come out of those interviews, James Toney sticks out far more for me. Am I going to pick James Toney to win this fight? The answer is no. I really think he can pull it off, and I know there's that puncher's chance. And let's be honest, Randy Couture literally has to cover his face and just dive into James Toney and just grab a leg, and James Toney can hammer fist as much as he wants. He could probably hurt him, but at the same time, all he's got to do is put Toney on his back, and this guy I don't think has had enough time to defend or learn how to take down or learn takedown defense. I will go with Randy Couture in this bout to represent this fight in the sport of mixed martial arts here. And of course, main event, we got about a minute to go on the show. Frankie the Answer Edgar taking on the prodigy BJ Penn. Frankie Edgar, who I scored that last fight 4-1 for Frankie Edgar, and BJ Penn, in my opinion, when I watched that bout, was visibly ill. I think hopefully both guys come in as close to 100% as possible. Edgar said he was suffering from staph infection as well. Who knows what's going to happen in this fight? Who do you have winning?
I want to say BJ Penn, but I'm going to go with Frankie Edgar,
because the trends show that rematches always favor the first victor.
Well, not just because of that. Frankie just looked a lot faster than BJ. He's really crisp. BJ had no chance of taking him down. Frankie actually landed a couple takedowns. I think he mixes his game up a lot more. And in the past, I don't know how many fights, but most of BJ's last fights, he's been standing. He hasn't gone to the ground at all. He just uses his jiu-jitsu for defensive purposes to keep him in guard, stand back up. So this is going to be a boxing match. And I think Frankie is too fast. So I think I'm going to go with Edgar.
I refuse to make a pick on this fight, but I will just for the sake of argument. I'm hoping BJ Penn will win this fight so we could see a trilogy bout, because I want to see these guys fight every single card, every single main event.
I will predict it will be close.
I can guarantee it's going to be close, but it will be close. All right, that's it. Thank you very much for coming in, Tyler. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
There you have it. You've been listening to The Showdown on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.